Great to have you with us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here. We're going to take you back to high school on the program today with the author of a book that I enjoyed very much. It's titled My Homecoming Dance, Reflections on Teaching in Wisconsin. And the author with me in the studio today, Sue Leamy-Kies, is a retired high school English teacher from Platteville. She's published poetry, essays, movie reviews, short stories, a play. But this is her full-length book, first one, My Homecoming Dance, as her first full-length book. And are you a teacher? If you are one, maybe you could let us know what's great and not so great about being a teacher. And if you aren't a teacher, maybe you could, you'd like to call in with a love letter to a teacher. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Sue Leamy-Kies, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Larry. I'm just so excited to be here.
You know, I was reading the book. I was thinking, well, this would be a great book for teachers, those who want to teach and retired teachers. And then I thought, you know what? It's also a great book for anybody who went to high school.
Yeah.
Because it brought, in my own mind, it brought back a lot of my own experiences, both teaching, but then also in high school. But maybe you can give us an overview, for those who haven't read it yet, of what people can expect when they give it a read.
Sure. I wrote the book kind of as an ode to teachers. It documents my teaching experience, but I don't think unless you actually teach, it's like any occupation, you don't know the occupation, but I think we see teachers because we all have them, but we don't know what they actually do. So in my book, I talk about my teaching experiences and some of the funny things that happened, some of the more serious things that happened, and I relate it through stories. But I also go full circle because I tell stories about the high school where I taught, but that's also the high school I graduated from, Platteville High School. So it's got a whole element of layers to it.
It's pretty cool to be able to teach where you once went to school. And I found your comments on that really interesting and a lot of times really fun.
Thank you.
And laugh out loud funny sometimes. Tell us about Platteville. There's a lot of people who don't know Platteville or where it is, and so it's southwestern Wisconsin. And
right. Platteville is in southwestern Wisconsin. We're just over the Mississippi River from Dubuque, Iowa, about 22 miles, and about 70 miles from Madison, down in that little corner of the state. When they built Highway 151 and made it, you know, a big, fancy four-lane interstate, I can remember the governor at the time, I think it was Tommy Thompson, said, oh, we're building a highway to nowhere. But we kind of like to think it's somewhere. And the UW-Platteville is a real big draw to Platteville. It makes us kind of who we are. They recently won an award, I think, lately, so for being one of the best small universities.
Yeah. And and it's a kind of a rural community in many ways. I mean, you've got this center, Platteville, where you've got the university and education as well for everybody. But it's rural in nature, isn't it?
Yes, it's very rural. And when I was younger, growing up there, it was much more rural than it is now. But farmers made up a big portion of what used to be in the school system, like in my class, when I was in grade school, we had 50 kids in a class. And then that was our Catholic school. Then the grade school had more than that. And then there was another elementary school over at the university called the lab school. So we had a lot of kids. In fact, my class was 210 students, my graduating class from Platteville. And now they're probably at 140. So it's very rural still. But now there are corporate farms and big dairies and such that have changed the
nature.
Look of Platteville.
Yeah, the look of it.
Yeah.
And you were actually a farmer, just as one more aside before you were a farmer after graduating high school.
From high school, yes. I married a farmer.
Yeah.
My grandparents farmed, and then I married a farmer, and we farmed outside of Platteville, and then for a few years over near Bloomington, Wisconsin, in Glen Haven. So, yes, I'm familiar with farming, and I could relate to the kids who had to get up and milk the cows and do the chores and then quick go in and shower and get to school. And we still, when I was teaching, had a few of those students who, you know, did that.
Lots of, and, you know, you finally decided to go to school to be a teacher. And, I mean, it was a lot of hard work, as I know there were a lot of summer schools and evening classes and whatnot to get you through because you had the other job.
Yes, yes. It took me 5 years. I went back to school when I was 31, and we were farming at the time. And I just thought, well, I want to get a career going here. So I did go back to school, and it was a lot of work. It really was. Mm-hmm. But, boy, was it worth it.
Yeah, and you landed, because you were living in that area, you really wanted to teach there, I would assume.
Yes. I had some interviews away, but we really wanted to stay in the Platteville area if we could. Our kids were going to school there and that. So, yeah, we stayed in that area and enjoyed being able to go to school and do the farming thing, too. So, yeah.
We need to talk about your time. You started, I mean, there were so many potential teachers out there or people who were looking for jobs. So, I mean, you started as kind of a part-timer or a sub-teacher, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, I did. I kind of look at it as I wiggled my way in. There were 250 to 300 applicants for every teaching job when I graduated in 1991. I graduated from UW-Platteville. And so I was very disappointed at first when I couldn't find a job. There just weren't very many openings. So I kind of wiggled my way in as a teacher's aide in the special education department. And it turned out to be one of the best things that ever happened. You know, it's kind of funny when you're going through it, you think it's just, you know, you're disappointed. But boy, that was wonderful because I worked with a woman named Jane who was an absolutely wonderful teacher. And I dedicate a chapter in the book to her, actually a couple chapters, because she was a wonderful mentor and a wonderful teacher.
Seemed like an extraordinary person.
She was just absolutely wonderful. And a few years ago, probably four now, she passed away of cancer. But she leaves a legacy, let me tell you. Yep.
I want to talk some more about her, but Mike in Green Bay is up with a comment about teaching, I believe. Mike, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hey, hello. So just very quickly, I'm sitting here with my attack beagle, Kaiser, so if he barks, I'll get off the phone. But my mentor teacher was Mrs. Kordemeyer, and I just thought of her when, the lady was talking. I'm retired 15 years. I loved every minute of it. And I was a severely emotionally disturbed teacher, or my kids were. Well, I was severely emotionally disturbed too, but I loved them. I can still remember them. I'm glad I taught when I did. Mrs. Kordemeyer, I get emotional just thinking about her. First day I saw her, she said, "Now come here, sonny. I'm going to tell you how to do this." My wife is a teacher. She's retiring in 5 weeks. And, if you haven't walked in our shoes, you better get in the classroom and see what we really do. Because we're social workers, parents, teachers, and we love kids. And anybody that thinks differently is making a mistake. And we're a vocation. We are not an occupation. So, just...
Mike, thank you very much for calling. Well, comment maybe on what Mike had to say there.
Oh, Mike, thank you and your wife for both being teachers. And yes, Jane, the woman I was talking about, worked with ED kids. So I know right what you're talking about. She showed me patience. She taught me how to deal with kids who really don't want to be in school and kids who don't have past experiences that are positive. So we had to try and turn that around. And Jane was just a wonderful person. So thank you for calling in.
You know, this is probably a good point for me to mention. I have, you know, I taught for my whole career here at the University of Wisconsin. I had so much respect for public school, high school, grade school teachers because thinking in my own situation, every student I taught graduated in the top 10% of their high school class. They're paying a lot of money to be there. They picked my class. And that's the range of students that you or any public teacher deals with now is, I just admire your ability to have done that.
Well, thank you. That was always kind of the challenge, I should say, because not only were they, you know, in school and maybe some of them didn't want to be, but English classes required all 4 years. So some of them, the last thing they wanted to do was take English. So it was my job to kind of pull them in. And that's what I tried to do. But it was always so much fun at the beginning of every year to look out there and see all those bright faces and wonder who I had in front of me and what the year was going to bring. And it was just almost like Christmas. You know?
I know that feeling as well. And I understand it for sure. You were student council advisor early on. So funny stories. The student council advisor usually goes to somebody, the youngest one, if I'm not mistaken, probably in any school.
Yeah, student council advisor was a challenge. And I had followed a person who'd done it for quite a few years, Mr. Rob Saris, and he was wonderful at it. So when I came after him, I thought, oh my gosh, how am I going to do this? He was a coach and brought a lot to it that I was afraid I wouldn't be able to. But the one thing they put us in charge of was the homecoming dance. And so that brought a lot of different elements to planning and what are the kids going to do? And they would come up with ideas of things to do that didn't always go as planned.
He had one involving pigs.
Yeah. Oh, that was interesting. Yeah, we decided to have a kiss the pig contest, or I should say the kids did. And the PETA people got word of it, and they weren't happy that we were kissing the pig. It was putting too much stress on the pig, and they ended up protesting outside the high school.
And by the way, this was a fundraiser event for libraries?
Oh, this was for homecoming.
Homecoming, okay.
Yeah, it was just a homecoming event. And the fundraiser that we had, that's good. I don't remember what the money went for, but it was a fundraiser. And kids would put money in the jar of the person, faculty member, they wanted to kiss the pig at the homecoming rally. And so it turned out our vice principal won, and I had to go pick up the pig at a neighboring farm, and that little pig kind of made a mess in the restroom in the high school. Yeah, anyway.
Well, he did what pigs do.
Yes, he did what pigs do. Mm-hmm. But it went off really well in the end, and it was okay, but it was a funny experience.
Samantha in Whitehall, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Samantha.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. Love your show. Anyways, I had three things. I had a kindergarten teacher. I'm 43 now, but I had a kindergarten teacher, Mrs. Olson. She passed away, umpteen years ago for Delta Elementary. And she really, really worked with the students and loved the students and taught them this old man and, you know, all this different stuff. And then when I got into high school, well, I was in special ed all my life. When I was in high school, I had a teacher, Michael Dunn, at Gaylectric Templo, who really was inspiring to, you know, teach the students and be able to help you, because I was told that I'd have to graduate 2 years after my class in 2000 because I wasn't catching up. Well, I was like, by golly, I'm going to get this done, and he helped. Plus, my grandma was a school teacher before she retired at 65, when you had to retire back in the day. And she really helped, too, to get you to learn and made learning fun. You didn't even know you were learning. So that gave me my love of learning, even though I never went on to college. It always helped me to, like, read and write and do things that with ADHD that some people thought I'd never do. So just wanted to get myself to all of them. One's dead. The others, well, two of them are gone, and the other's retired. So.
Well, Samantha, thank you so much for that story. Or your remembrances. A comment, Sue?
Well, bless the kindergarten teachers out there, because I remember my kindergarten teacher, too. I think, you know, if they can get us all off to a good start, that's wonderful. Because we all the rest of us teachers, we build on what happens in the younger grades. And as far as your high school teacher that made learning fun, oh, my gosh, that's what I strive to do. I mean, not all learning can be fun. There's work involved, too. But I thought if I can make it fun for the kids, it was fun for me, too. But that takes a lot of planning as well. So I just want people to understand, to make learning fun, teachers work hard to do that. So thanks.
I know you took it upon yourself to teach the kids a lot of new vocabulary words. One of your favorite stories related to one of your favorite words, gullible.
Yes, that was an interesting, I'll never forget that. That was one day we were doing the vocabulary words. I did five every week along with some literary terms. And because I figure you have to know the basics, kind of like you learn the scales to, you know, play music, you have to learn the basics of the language in order to use it appropriately. So anyway, one of the weeks, gullible was the word. And one day, one of the students pointed out to me that someone had written gullible on the ceiling. And I would tell kids, now don't look at the ceiling. You don't want to cheat now. And I had one young man, Vinny, and he refused to look at the ceiling because he thought we were trying to pull one on him, you know? And we'd say, no, Vinny, it's really up there. And the kids were trying. He refused to look. He was mad because he thought we were pulling his leg. So it taught the word perfectly, and everybody got it right that day. So
Denise emailed us. Denise is a retired elementary teacher from Platteville, now living in Minnesota. And your book was Denise's reading during recovery from spinal surgery. And Denise enjoyed all the memories of special people in the Platteville schools and says thanks for a wonderful book, Sue.
Well, thank you, Denise. And I hope you're doing well now and recovered. And I appreciate you reading the book. And, yeah, Platteville's a good place to teach, right?
And I hope a lot of I hope a lot of people read your book, but I hope a lot
of
former teachers read the book because and current teachers read the book because it tells us so much about life. But at the same time, if you're like me, when you're reading it, you're going to remember your own stories from school that really brought back some fine memories for me as both a teacher and thinking back to my own days as a student. When I signed up for typing class, because typically it was all girls took typing. And I thought, well, here I could be in a class with all girls. So I signed up for typing. It does remind me of the technology, too, because when I took it, I mean, it was an old Smith Corona, push hard.
Yep. The manual typewriters, yeah. The electric typewriters just came into being when I was in high school. We had two of them in the room, and we'd all run to get there and try and get the electric typewriters. So, yeah, typing was a big deal.
Erica in Lake Tomahawk, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Erica.
Good morning. I just wanted to give a shout-out to Sister Mary Andrew, who was quite possibly one of the meanest teachers I've ever known. She and I did not hit it off. But when I was in the second or third grade, she told me I was going to wind up being a truck driver. Like, that was a fate worse than death. I'm 71. I'm still driving truck, and I could not be happier.
Well, good for you.
Oh, Eric, thank you so much for that call. Well, sometimes what the teacher tells you you're going to be turns out that way, and sometimes it doesn't.
It's very true. I had one student, and we teachers have to be careful of that, but he was late for everything. And he didn't have his homework done sometimes, you know, and his big thing was football. This isn't in the book, but I remember telling him, I said, you know, I won't say his name, but there's more to life than football, you know. And he kind of looked at me, and he ended up playing pro ball down in Miami. So sometimes teachers just, we don't know.
And probably was, I'm thinking about the amount of money that he was making.
Yep.
Versus what a teacher makes.
Yep.
And it's quite a difference. What are your most treasured items in your classroom? And some funny stories about it. Was the stapler? Now, why the heck the stapler, and what was, tell us a story relating to that.
Well, I would have staplers, and having taught sophomores and juniors, they tend to, like, wham down on the stapler, and every year the stapler would break. And I got very, very frustrated after buying a new stapler, because our teacher money that we used to buy these things was sacred. I mean, we didn't have a lot of it. So I thought, I'm going to splurge one year, and I bought an electric stapler. And so you just feed the paper into the automatic electric stapler, and wham, it staples. And so I would have students who would be kind of afraid of that and such. But before that, when I had the staplers that broke all the time, then I'd have students that would want to fix them. Especially the boys. They'd take it down to the tech ed room. I can fix this. And they'd bring it back, and most of the time it wasn't fixed. It was not good. And I think I said in the book it goes to the cemetery in the back of the school where we throw all the dead staplers. But it always brought a lot of fun with the stapler.
Yeah, and the electric one.
Yeah. Yeah, one girl always jumped whenever she stapled it. She could never get used to that.
Oh, Samantha emailed us. She's a teacher educator at UW-Madison and wants to give a lot of love of her to her student teachers this semester, especially Amy and Johnny. They're two of the most loving and caring special ed teachers Samantha's had the honor to work with. Strong teachers support strong teachers.
That's very, very true. I had many student teachers, and I learned so much from them, and I hope they learned from me. And when I was, you know, learning to teach, my student teacher or my teacher mentees were very important to me. So I tried to pass that on. And that's how you learn, is by going in the classroom, interacting with the kids, and then having someone give you a few little hints along the way. And that is so important, to have a mentor. It really is.
Linda in Platteville. Hi, Linda.
Hello. I'm calling because Sue was probably teaching in 2010 when Act 10 came about. And I wanted to have her address the effect of that on education, because education is also political.
Yeah, and you do have a really interesting chapter on Act 10. You want to talk about it?
Yeah, thanks for calling, Linda. Yeah, and I think it was 2011, if I'm not. I think that's right. But yeah, Governor Walker passed the budget repair bill, also known as Act 10, and it was absolutely devastating to teachers. It was about midway through my teaching. And I can't tell you how, like, a punch in the gut that felt like. Because teachers who were on our negotiating board back when we could negotiate in collective bargaining, would bargain for you know, getting better, you know, conditions. And what they did was, I know people who were on our bargaining team, they took lower wages in lieu of getting some better benefits. So when Act 10 came along, Governor Walker pointed out all the wonderful benefits teachers got, but yet, you know, we had bargained for those and got less money, you know, in the bargain for it, because it was cheaper for our school districts. And so not only that, you know, it was less money, but it also kind of took away the prestige of being a teacher. It didn't, it made us seem like we weren't as good as other professions. And it was very devastating. And we're still recovering. I hope we do. But you know how I told you when we had 250 to 300 applicants for all the jobs? Now they're lucky to get three or four. And the teacher programs, they're in the colleges, there aren't as many people going into teaching. And that's, again, devastating. So, yeah, Act 10 had a big effect, and I hope we can recover it from it. It really affects public education.
Sue in Marshfield emailed us. In 10th grade, she was reeling from her mother's untimely death, and her father was also grieving, of course. Sue said she was rather aimless about the future. And then Miss Vogel, her sophomore year biology teacher and also a high school counselor, recognized her potential. Sue was called into her office, wondering what she'd done wrong. Instead, Miss Vogel outlined Sue's path to college. And she's forever grateful for Miss Vogel's intervention because she ended up graduating from UW-La Crosse. Her teacher's encouragement led to her future success. And Sue says she is forever grateful to Miss Vogel.
Oh, that's wonderful, Sue. I am so happy for you. And two things there, going through loss. I have a chapter in my book about going through losses that can be absolutely devastating. I lost students through, you know, as time went on. I lost peers that passed away, and our own son passed away. Going through those things can be devastating, and you have to learn to go on afterwards. And I'm so thrilled you had support in a teacher counselor that helped you with that. And I know I tried to help students, you know, with that too, and tried to help them find their way. So I'm glad you found teaching.
Yeah, I was thinking about that and relating to what you had to go through as well, because I lost a daughter, Lauren, which I can't even talk about, in the middle of a semester.
Oh.
And it was a very hard time. But the students helped me a lot.
Yes. I on one hand, our son passed away in August. It'll be 20 years this August. And I didn't know how I was going to go back to teaching in September. I just didn't know if I could do it. And somehow I did, and I got there, and I had support of people around me, and our superintendent was supportive of me. Dr. Jacobson was supportive of me. He was our principal, and my students were wonderful, just wonderful. And it is hard. And then once I got back in, I was glad I had something to think about. I don't know if that worked that way for you, Larry, but you have something there to go back to.
Yeah. Jen in Madison emailed us. Jen wants to shout out to a couple of teachers. Mrs. Petruska, a teacher at Mendota Elementary in Madison. She creates an atmosphere that feels like a party where she diligently and lovingly teaches them the very important art of reading in second grade. The other teacher is Mr. Bester at One City Schools in Monona. The man would do literally anything to help a child. The best thing that he does is teach them the habits of character required to be a good human being in this world. And he does it with so much grace and kindness. He leaves Jen speechless, and she often tears up when she talks about him and how much he means to her family.
Oh, that's very moving. I can totally relate in that if a teacher doesn't care about the students know that. And the caring relationship is number one. It really is. I mean, not that you want to become their best friends or their, you know, but they need to know that you are there for them. You're there to teach content, but you're there to teach them first. And if they don't have the Maslow's hierarchy of needs comes to mind. They have to have, you know, food, clothing, caring, all that needs to take place before you can, you know, learn effectively. So, yes, that relationship with students is top. That's above everything.
And when it comes to parents, you had an interesting point. So you said there are three kinds of parents: uninvolved, supportive is second, and third is overzealous. So you've got every between, and you said that the numbers of it used to be the number two, the supportive, when you started, but that's changed over time.
Yes, over time, it's kind of interesting because I also say, or I think, that schools are kind of a microcosm of what we see in society. And now with, like, great income divisions, you know, you have the haves, the have-nots, and the middle class is kind of dwindled. And that has happened, I believe, intellectually as well. So you have uninvolved parents who are struggling. It's all they can do to kind of take care of themselves and make sure food's on the day. It's very hard for them to help their kid make school a priority. And then you have the overzealous parents who want their kids to do, and I understand this, but they want their kids to do, they want a 4.0, they want their kid to get scholarships, they want their kid, and they can get sometimes a little pushy to the point where the kids are feeling very stressed. And so that can be a problem sometimes. And the good old middle, like when I was, you know, I hate to sound like my grandpa, you know, in those good old days, but, you know, that middle class, that middle of the road where, yes, school is important. You're going to go to school and behave because, you know, we expect you to do that. Just that supportiveness of education and school and teachers. That's really what teachers need, is that middle place.
Support.
Yep, support.
Let's talk about tech. I mean, there's so many things we haven't talked about. There's so many funny stories and interesting stories but a couple of the things that I wanted to touch on. One is a technology, and we mentioned in passing, but how have you seen the new technologies, internet and everything else, change the classroom?
Oh, it has. That's the biggest change. Students and what they need to learn basically doesn't change, I don't think. They need you to care. They need, you know, but technology is so important. And I love technology, but boy, it's hard to draw the line as to, you know, there's so much to choose from in technology. I remember when we first got email at our school and students would sneak into the computer lab to check their email. Because it was before phones, and we had to lock the doors to the computer lab because they were running in there to check their email. So I actually saw it from the beginning, from, you know, the machine, you know, like, what do you call those?
Manual typewriter.
Typewriters, and now we have copy machines that do everything, and the kids have phones, and I know a lot of schools. That became a problem toward the end of my teaching. Every kid had a phone, and then even then everybody got a Chromebook. And to try and keep them on task when those things are in front of them becomes a problem. But the things that technology can do for students when used appropriately is just, it's absolutely amazing. So we have to, and I heard someone on talking yesterday on public radio about the artificial intelligence. That's very helpful, too, but we're going to have to learn how to use it appropriately. It's important kids know how to use it because when they go in the workplace, it's going to be there. But it's hard for teachers to know, you know, what to teach and how much technology to use and when to rein it in.
So a couple of things. relating to potential teachers, and let's take early career teachers. What would you recommend to early career teachers?
Early career teachers, I can remember when I first started, is to just keep in mind that you are, number one, a learner. You're a forever learner. So you are going to be learning along with the students. And when you first start teaching, that is going to help you if you remember that, because you will have to break things down in order to teach them. And you will learn from year to year. Every year I would kind of take note of the things that worked and the things that didn't. So if something worked, and if you don't try new things, you're not going to learn.
Yeah.
So trying new things is important. And I always tried to, you know, keep up and try something new. And if it didn't work, kind of tweak it. So new teachers, just I think it's really important to remember that, number one, you are a learner as well as your students are, and keep on trying to make it better.
Is that what makes a great teacher? I mean, what makes a great teacher?
That's a good question. I think one of the things that a great teacher brings to the job is their personality. Because we've all had, I know in our school, not the same teacher doesn't hit it off with everyone. There are various teachers there for a reason, because that way students can hit it off with other, you know, mm-hmm. find somebody who fits their learning style, their personality. So I think, number one, a teacher's got to remember that you need to bring you to the job. Let the kids get to know who you are, bring your strengths, but also work on your weaknesses. But don't be afraid to bring your strengths to the job, and don't think you have to be like everybody else. Don't compare yourself to everybody else. Do the job that you know you can do, and learn from other people, but implement what works for you.
You know, an email from a listener who taught elementary school for many years and found through all the ups and downs, no matter how difficult the day was, there was joy every single day. Each word was a sentence. Every single day there was joy.
That is so true. I got so much joy out of my job. There were a lot of challenges. There were a lot of work. There was a lot of work. There was heartache sometimes. But the joy was there. The students, like I said, when they catch on to something, and I know this is kind of cliche, but their eyes light up and they, oh my gosh, I did that. Or they get finished with a speech that they did a good job on and they're so thrilled. And even the fact they stood up in front of the class and gave the speech sometimes was a milestone. That's why I'm glad I wrote the book, because I recorded the joy that I felt through all those years, and I am really glad I did that.
I'm glad you did, too. I very much enjoyed reading your book, and I hope a lot of people get a chance to read it, Sue.
Oh, thank you.
The title of the book is My Homecoming Dance, and the subtitle, Reflections on Teaching in Wisconsin. How do we get a copy?
Good question. It's published by the Wisconsin Writers Association, so you can go to wiwrite.org, or you can go to Barnes & Noble and Amazon. It's on there. Mm-hmm. And please, if you go to your library and your bookstore and they don't have it, please request it so they get it. I also have a website that if you emailed me on the email on my website, I would send you a copy. My website is SueLeemyKies.com.
K-I-E-S.
Yes.
Your last name is spelled Sue.
SueLeemyKies.com.
A pleasure, Sue. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. I hope you sell a lot of books. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Larry. It's been fun.
Sue Leemyekies, our guest. Her book, My Homecoming Dance, and you're going to laugh a lot, but there's some tears that can come in that book as well. But you're going to also recall a lot of your own experiences growing up in school. And you'll think about teachers that had an impact on you. And, you know, we're going to turn our attention to another kind of a teacher, a tutor who helps in adult literacy in Wisconsin. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News.